Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The great German filmmaker Werner Herzog is a force of nature, but don't let that soothe you. Nature, he said in his great film Grizzly Man, is not harmony, but chaos, hostility, and murder. All that plus a wild creative ambition and a search for ecstatic truth, and you begin to know Werner Herzog. After 60 films over nearly five decades, many know his work well. He's out with two new films and a new film school if you dare to try it. This hour, On Point film great Werner Herzog is with us. You can join the conversation if you followed Herzog's work into jungles, over mountains, ice caps, human limits, in Fitzcarraldo, Grizzly Man, Rescue, Dawn, or this season, The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, with Nicolas Cage. You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Werner Herzog has directed, written, or produced nearly 60 feature and documentary films, from his 1972 hit Aguirre, The Wrath of God, to Nosferatu, Heart of Glass, Encounters at the End of the World, and many more. His two new films out this year are The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, starring Nicolas Cage, and My Son, What Have Ye Done?, opening today in New York. He's got a new book and a new film school coming, and an amazing way with film and words. Here he is in the 2007 Encounters at the End of the World.
The National Science Foundation had invited me to Antarctica, even though I left no doubt that I would not come up with another film about penguins. My questions about nature, I let them know, were different. I told them I kept wondering, why is it that human beings put on masks or feathers to conceal their identity? And why do they saddle horses and feel the urge to chase the bad guy? And why is it that certain species of ants keep flocks of plant lice as slaves to milk them for droplets of sugar? I asked them, why is it that a sophisticated animal like a chimp does not utilize inferior creatures? He could straddle a goat and ride off into the sunset.
And right there, you're in Werner Herzog territory. Werner Herzog joins us from New York. Werner Herzog, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I want to compliment you on your latest films, The Bad Lieutenant in particular, enjoyed this week, and My Son, which many people will not have seen yet, but it's quite a psychological ride. I wanted to ask you right off the bat, what is it about animals? You've got iguanas and crocodiles kind of with wonderful cameos in The Bad Lieutenant, and you've got ostriches who get a star turn in My Son. And you almost seem to take on their point of view of the world. Why?
Well, in a way, I like to cast important parts with animals. But it has happened before. For example, in Stroshek, there are wonderful dancing chicken at the end, and nobody forgets it ever who has seen the film. And it is strange, although all these things were not written into the screenplay, they just came along. The iguanas in Bad Lieutenant, for example, were something that I just decided almost on the spot. And I filmed them myself in a very odd way. And everybody who has seen the film talks about it. My son, what have you done? Of course, there are flamingos. The eagles in drag.
Eagles in drag, wonderful, yes.
The leading character, Michael Shannon, calls them, and ostriches. But I don't know. I think they give us an insight into something that I can't even name. I don't know, but in a way, everybody talks about it.
I love the freedom that you feel to do that. I mean, that's not anything like standard Hollywood to give the iguanas a little sort of blinking aside, or the crocodile at the automobile accident in The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, or alligator, who suddenly the whole film is being seen. The action is being seen from the alligator's point of view. It's great.
Yeah, It's true, yeah. But that's the beauty of doing films outside of the film industry. And this film, My Son, What Have You Done, is a film that came almost spontaneously. Although it was a long dormant project, the screenplay was written many years before, and it fell dormant. And all of a sudden, in a discussion with David Lynch, it somehow was ignited. And David has this way to really inspire some sort of confidence. And in a way, he threw a match and ignited something. And all of a sudden, the film was made.
Let's listen to just a little bit from My Son, What Have You Done? Michael Shannon plays the leading role here as a young man who is inspired to kill his mother and does, inspired by the Greek play Orestes. Here's a bit from the film where Michael Shannon, as Brad, is sitting in a packed theater audience, in the audience this time, but he's suddenly blurting out lines over the performance going on stage. He gets shushed by the play's director, played by Udo Kier.
I slew her. I deny no word hereof. Hear me, woven web that slew my father. This robe, she dyed it in the blood that ran around her lover's sword.
Yet you must tell the manner of your deed.
Drawn sword in hand, I lopped her head.
Who, and by craft of who, did urge you on?
Fate and necessity made me do it.
Brad, don't participate. Disturbing the play. Just
men
be quiet.
Men long dead draw from their killers blood to answer blood.
Blood to answer blood. In Werner Herzog's My Son, What Have You Done? Werner Herzog joins us from New York. The mother dies. I wonder what drew you to this play. You famously were very close to your own mother, who sort of heroically raised you and your siblings in Germany.
Well, you shouldn't make the mistake to bring up a confusion that the director of a film or the author of a film must be like his central character. No, it's
fine,
not like
you're
that.
Free of
course,
that, nevertheless.
I had a wonderful, very, very courageous mother whom I adored. Here in this case, of course, it is connected to an ancient Greek drama, the Oresteia, where the son has to murder, he has to avenge the death of the father, who was in turn murdered by the mother. He, in order to avenge him, has to kill his own mother. And of course, this is a subject, it is a theme that runs all the way back into Greek antiquity, into Sophocles and and others who took up the story. So, of course, my personal attitude towards my own mother and the attitude of Brad in the film is quite distinct.
What's it like for you to swing between a kind of police noir film in New Orleans to this, sort of surreal psychodrama? I guess the setting's in San Diego, but it could almost be anywhere. It's blanched in that California sunlight. But, I mean, do those sit easily side by side in your mind? You make your films so quickly, they're almost on top of each other.
Well, it comes easily to me because whenever there's a great story out there, then I'm at ease. And whenever it's getting physical, I'm also at ease. Although both films are not very physical films, let's say, like Aguirre, The Wrath of God. But the stories are the thing that really fascinates me and intrigues me. And you see, I live in the United States, in fact, in Los Angeles, which I like a lot. And I'm out for new horizons. I'm out for new alliances. I'm out for new alliances with actors like, let's say, Michael Shannon, Willem Dafoe, Chloe Sevigny, you just name it, or Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Yes, and Nicolas Cage in Bad Lieutenant, Eva Mendes, Val Kilmer. It's just wonderful to reach out into new terrain, make alliances with fascinating actors. And in My Son, What Have You Done, it was always clear there should be a film with all the mushrooming multi-million budgets in the film industry. There should be films out there with a contained, very small budget, but with the best of actors and a great story. And then that should be a formula to get into, and I say it as if I were the producer, to get into profitable terrain fairly quickly.
Under $2 million, if I read correctly on my son's lesson.
No, oh, that's not correct.
Near it's, then, it's, or somewhere. Yeah. I mean, anywhere near there sounds small, very small these days.
Yes, but you see, you keep the budget low if you shoot fast. And if you don't fool around for a long time, endless time in post-production. So the film was done very, very quickly, and it was wonderful how it came together. It was almost like sleepwalking. Very easy to do it for me.
And done on video, so the editing comes quickly as well.
Well, it comes as quickly as that with, let's say, celluloid. You transfer it into the digital domain, mm-hmm. and then, you see, I like to edit quickly, to go edit with great urgency, and you leave out the unnecessary things. You just leave them behind left and right, and you go for the essentials. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's easy for me. You can almost think as fast as you are. As you are editing nowadays.
There's a meeting right now at the regenerated pulpit. Oh yeah, I'm born to preach the gospel. I'm born to preach the gospel. I'm born to preach the gospel, and I sure do love my job. Oh yeah.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour with the great and challenging filmmaker Werner Herzog about his life in film and his latest projects. The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, with Nicolas Cage out. My Son, What Have You Done? Opening today in New York, and so much more in the long and incredibly prolific film life of this director. Here's just a bit from The Bad Lieutenant. Nicolas Cage stars in the title role as a cop with a bad back and a bad drug habit. Here he is as Lieutenant Terrence McDonough, impatient to get a prescription filled at the drugstore.
Hello, miss! I'm a lieutenant in the police department. I'm in the middle of a homicide investigation. Can I get my prescription, please?
Do you see I'm on the phone? Hey, you can't come back here.
You got me waiting 30 minutes so you can make a personal phone call.
Can't be back.
Security, the pharmacy, please.
This is it.
Come on, guy.
Police emergency. This is it.
You know a cop.
What's that look like?
Then why are you acting all crazy for?
This is $23 with my copay, right? Here's 40. Get everybody a drink. Get out of my way.
Nicolas Cage in The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Werner Herzog, I watched this and wondered why you haven't worked with Nicolas Cage before. He seems such a natural for your sensibility.
We thought the same. We asked ourselves exactly the same question. Nicolas had watched my films for decades, and I have seen him in quite a few films, and it never occurred to us that we should work with each other. And all of a sudden, almost within the same week, we had the feeling and the urge, let's call each other, let's find out what we are doing. And actually, Nicolas called me from Australia. He was doing a film at that time. And within less than 60 seconds, we were in business. It was somehow preordained in a way. I'm exaggerating now, but it was strange that we hadn't had this idea before.
At the beginning of this film, he jumps into muddy Hurricane Katrina waters to help pull a prisoner who's up to his chin in a jail cell out of those waters, and ends up doing damage to his back that leaves him in pain, almost sublime pain that pushes him a little crazy in the course of this film. But I was reading somewhere that you, years ago, dove into muddy waters in South America, nearly landed on a pylon yourself, speaking of the physical making of films. You were lucky he was not in this story.
Yes, but it has nothing to do with my personal biography. That was during the shooting of Fitzcarraldo, and I describe the incident in this book, Conquest of the Useless. But the funny thing in My Son, What Have You Done? In Bad Lieutenant,
yes.
Is there's a flooded prison tract. And of course, we couldn't shoot in a real prison. And there was some sort of a small set. And we had to fill it with water. And it didn't get murky enough. So we tried it with colors.
Right.
And it turned out the color was toxic. You can't have
the color
in there for hours.
Oh, yeah. Get him
so,
out.
So the set designer decided, let's try some sort of powdered coffee. And then it turned out, yeah, the coffee has a lot of caffeine, which seeps in through your skin and really can give you a heart attack. What happened is we used decaffeinated coffee, and what you see on screen is 11,000 gallons of decaffeinated coffee.
Oh, that's amazing. With a snake and a prisoner, and eventually Nicolas Cage all in it.
Yes, right, yeah. Oh, I mean, wow. Nicolas was there only for a short period of time, but the prisoner who is in there and pleads to be let out, he spent at least 2 hours in this murky waters, as we call it.
You maybe always have been, certainly have become, given the way filmmaking has gone, such an extraordinary filmmaker. Roger Ebert says, you know, Herzog is like no other filmmaker. And now you're 67. You've made nearly 60 films. You've been at this for a long, long time. You were talking about how the physical that you have often engaged so famously, infamously almost, you write about it in the book that you've got out, Conquest of the Useless, Reflections from the Making of Fitzcarraldo. And this is your diary from that film decades ago now, where you had your crew drag a steamboat over the mountains in South America. It's sort of nearly going mad along with any number of them in the process. Do you feel yourself still in the same line of energy that was in that film? Are you in a different phase of life and filmmaking now, or the same beam?
Very hard to make a judgment looking at myself. I don't want to look at myself, but one thing is clear. I live in the United States. I'm very pleased. I'm very happy to be here as a guest in your country. It has been very lively for me. I'm out for new horizons, new production alliances, new actors. So it's just wonderful. And in the last 11 months, I actually made 3 films. In between the 2 films, I made a short film in the south of Ethiopia, and I worked on the translation of Conquest of the Useless into English. There was actually a professional translator, but I worked on stylistic details, and I started my film school. So, but I'm not a workaholic, so I'm not really hectic. I work very steadily and completely focused.
And for a long time, here's a bit from that 1982 epic film, Fitzcarraldo. Title character is a dreamer with big plans to build an opera house in the middle of a tiny town in the Peruvian jungle. Here he's shouting feverishly from the local church bell tower.
This church remains closed till this town has its opera house. I want the opera house. I want my opera house! I want the opera house! This church remains closed till this town has its opera house! I want my opera house!
Werner Herzog's Fitzcarraldo, 1982. Let's turn to our listeners, Beaufort, North Carolina. Michael, you are on the air with Werner Herzog.
Hi, Mr. Herzog. It's an honor to talk to you. I've watched most of what you've done and love it. And I wanted to ask you, when I both the documentaries and the fiction, I just love both ends, and I just wondered if you could talk about what it's like in your head when you're behind a camera shooting a documentary compared with shooting a fictional film.
Well, for me, it's all movies. That's number one. And number two, we shouldn't, in my case, make such a clear distinction between documentaries and feature films, because many of my documentaries are highly stylized. They become inventive. They incorporate staged elements. But it's not for the sake of misleading you. It's probably more for the sake of leading you towards a deeper truth, a deeper stratum of truth, which I normally would call an ecstasy, the ecstatic truth. So, but it shouldn't make you nervous at all. It is a little bit like you don't worry about a writer who writes a drama for the theater and then next year he publishes a novel and then publishes poetry. So for me, it's all just movies, and I love what I do, and it comes as it comes. I do not make a choice like in a career where I'm planning this or that. All these films are always coming at me like burglars in the middle of the night.
How do you know when you're on the right track, to Michael's point, when you're in the midst of making the films, how do you know when you're on the trail of ecstatic truth?
Well, Michael Shannon, and of course in this case it is an actor who transports you into an area where as an audience you go beyond what you normally would see from an actor. And of course, having worked in this profession for a long time, but I had it from the very beginning, I had a very, very good eye for actors. Michael Shannon, at the time I got in touch with him, was not really well known. He got his Academy Award nomination 5 months later or so, but I had the feeling there's an extraordinary man out there, and I would love to make this film, My Son, with him. And it's not only him. There's always a texture of a chemistry between actors. A supporting cast, otherwise your leading character would be no man's land. So I really love to work with actors who have something extraordinary, who have a presence and an intensity on the screen that you normally do not see.
But even with such actors, you very often take them places they do not go with most directors. I mean, it's still your vision, your energy that's pushing toward that truth. How do you know when you're getting there?
I think it was quite clear with Nicolas Cage from the very beginning. I said to him, I'll take you where you've not been before. And he chuckled and he knew exactly what I meant. I challenged him. And he really is up to the challenge. And the same thing with Michael Shannon. I said to him, Michael, I have to burden you with the leading character of a new film. Are you ready for that? He says, of course, yes, I am. And I said to him, of course, we have to go out to some geographical areas that are difficult. Peru is not difficult, but at the time I was planning to do the film, there was one sequence, a very strange sequence planned for the north of Pakistan. And it was quite clear we are not going to go there. We would be too much of a target. So it would be unwise. And we decided we would go to westernmost China, to Kashgar, where only weeks later the Uyghur uprising started. And it was a very volatile area, but with extraordinary people. And Michael simply said, yes, I'm going to go there with you. If we get arrested, because we did it guerrilla style, if we get arrested, I'd like you to be arrested together with me and the producer, Eric Bassett, as well. So the three of us showed up, and had we been arrested, it would have been the three of us.
Richard Corliss writes about you. The German director's movie sojourns take him not just to remote corners of Peru, Alaska, Thailand, but also to the uncharted interior of man's highest, most lunatic dreams. Elizabeth in Montreal, Canada. You're on the air with Werner Herzog.
Yes, hi. Well, I've been a fan of his for years, and I've seen pretty much everything he's done. And what I appreciate about your movies is that you deal with the grand ideas, the grand passions. Even in a more obscure film like Little Dieter Needs to Fly, I walked away feeling that you've given me something to think about, to ruminate on. And there's no gratuitous violence, there's no gratuitous or useless sex on film. You're taking your audience to places, apropos what you said about your actor before, you're taking your audience to places where they've never been. And every single time I go see a movie of yours, that very same thing happens to me. I walk away and I'm kind of it's a kind of transformative experience. So I always know that something new is going to happen every time I go back to one of your films. And I hate to see it, but I know that German movies are very heavy and they deal with the weighty issues. And that's where it really resides, the beauty and the transcendental. That's where it really resides, in the ideas, in the passions, in the way it's and the way it's all formulated. So that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call. Werner Herzog, is Elizabeth seeing you the way you wish to be seen, feeling you the way you wish to be felt?
Well, it sounds very kind what Elizabeth says, and she's at the right point when she says, I'm trying to transport an audience into some area which is unknown, where they have some sort of an illumination. We have to be careful with the term. Let's touch this illumination only with a pair of pliers.
Mm.
But that's what I'm trying to do. I think that's what poets try to do. That's what real filmmaking is all about. And there are moments where you know you're not alone anymore. You have something that enlightens your existence in a way. And it happens in cinema as well. And if I achieve something like that for moments in one of my films, I think I've done everything I set out to do.
Let's get just a sense of that from the film Elizabeth mentioned. Your 1997 documentary, Little Dieter Needs to Fly, it was the story of Dieter Dingler, German-born, American prisoner of war during the Vietnam War, escaped in 1966 from a prison camp in Laos. This came before Rescue Dawn. Here's Dieter Dingler explaining for Werner Herzog his reaction after his friend and fellow escapee, Dwayne, was killed by villagers.
Dwayne, my friend, he was gone. And from then on, my emotions, my progress became mechanical. In fact, I couldn't care less if I would live or die. But then later on, there was this bear, this beautiful bear that was following me. It was circling me, in fact, sometimes, and it was gone. I missed it. It was just like a dog. It was just like a pet. Of course, I knew this bear was there. He was waiting to eat me. When I think about it, this bear meant death to me. And it is really ironic. That's the only friend I had at the end was death.
Death as Dieter Dingler's only friend at the end. And now in The Bad Lieutenant, you've got Nicolas Cage, somebody shot in a drug den, and he says, shoot him again, his soul's still dancing, the death theme right there. And suddenly he rises, a body above the body, breakdancing over the corpse. It's Herzog.
It's good that you mentioned this scene and what Elizabeth just before said on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
German films have a tendency to be overly heavy and loaded with gloom and philosophy and things like that. It doesn't occur to me in my movies. In fact, they are very, very hilarious. When you look at Bad Lieutenant, audiences roar in laughter when it comes to the dancing soul. And it's there's some very, very funny stuff out there. And when you look at My Son, What Have You Done, there is a sequence out on the tree trunk, the largest tree in the world, and a midget on it. A man raving about a gigantic rooster chasing the tiniest horse and the midget around the tallest tree in the world.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with the great and challenging, daring, inspired, some say mad, he says clinically sane, filmmaker Werner Herzog about his life in film and his latest projects, The Bad Lieutenant, My Son, What Have You Done, his book, a collection from his diaries on the making of Fitzcarraldo, Conquest of the Useless, and we'll talk about his new film school. His 2005 documentary, Grizzly Man, portrayed the life and death of amateur grizzly bear expert Timothy Treadwell, who lived unarmed among grizzlies for 13 summers before being brutally mauled and killed by the animals he tried to befriend. Let's listen to a bit.
Perfection belonged to the bears, but once in a while Treadwell came face to face with the harsh reality of wild nature. This did not fit into his sentimentalized view that everything out there was good and the universe in balance and in harmony. Male bears sometimes kill cubs to stop the females from lactating and thus have them ready again for fornication.
Oh, God. I love you. I love you, and I don't understand. It's a painful world.
Here I differ with Treadwell. He seemed to ignore the fact that in nature there are predators. I believe the common denominator of the universe is not harmony, but chaos, hostility, and murder.
Werner Herzog and Grizzly Man, lighting up and differing with Timothy Treadwell. We've got a question on just that front, if I may, from Richmond, Vermont. Luke, you're on the air with Werner Herzog.
Hi, Tom. Great to talk to you. Werner, I'm a huge fan of your work. I got to see Bad Lieutenant, and it was a hell of a lot of fun. Really an excellent movie.
Thank you, yeah.
I wonder how much, first of all, how much David Lynch influenced My Son, What Have You Done? I'm also wondering if you ever considered working with any of the young comedy geniuses out there, Richard Christie or Sal Governale. And third is a question about your relationship with nature. Do you feel that in nature and in the jungle, birds sing or just scream out in pain?
Werner Herzog's words, more or less, earlier. Yeah,
heavy questions. Easiest is about David Lynch. I love his films, and we have a very fine personal rapport. His influence in the film is more limited than you might believe. He actually was the one, but that's very, very important. He was the one who ignited a project that was long dormant by just his enthusiasm. And we were raving and ranting about doing manifestos of films, low budget, best of actors, and a great story. And he said to me, Werner, yeah, we should do it. Do you have a project? I said, yes, I do. He said, when do you start? I said, tomorrow. And I could start tomorrow. So, and he had an eye on the production from the distance, and in a way, there's an homage to David Lynch in the film. There's one moment where you see a man on a treadmill in an aerobic studio, and he has his oxygen mask on him. So, I wanted to do something, and of course, Grace Zabriskie, the actress, she's not David's discovery, but she's so important in some of his films, and I bow my head towards David. Practically speaking, his influence or so was very limited. He wanted to stay at a distance. He didn't want to mess around with my film.
And what about
I
you?
I would never mess around with his film.
No doubt. And what about you and nature and your perspective? Our caller was citing your own phrase from some time back, you know, saying that birds aren't singing in the jungle, they're screaming out in pain. And we heard you just there in Grizzly Bear saying the common character of the universe, not harmony, but chaos, hostility, and murder.
Well, I said it so pronounced because I wanted to have an ongoing argument with Timothy Treadwell. And of course, the argument is not alone with him. Mm-hmm. It's with everyone who is into this sentimentalized view of wild nature in the Walt Disney mode of seeing wild nature. And I think it is wrong, and we have really moved away very, very far from contact with wild nature. And there's a lot of things I don't like in the public discourse. So that was one side, and quite often I have been associated with romantic culture. Mm. No, I'm not. I mean, when I make a statement that in nature out there, the common denominator is
chaos, hostility,
chaos,
and murder.
Hostility and murder, yes. It's a totally unromantic view of nature. That's That's the point, and you see it in many other films.
How does that leave you thinking then about all the environmental concern and everything else? Are you thinking, well, nature's already living in hell, so...
No. We have to do a lot, and I mean, don't wait for a climate conference in politics to settle it. I spend only 10% of gasoline of what I used to spend. I consume somewhat less, and if it would be very, very easy for every single one of us to save at least 20-25% of energy that we are burning away. We shouldn't throw away food. We should just eat it and not throw half of it away into the garbage. So without politics, every single one of us could settle a lot of what's going on. And, of course, when I did the film in Antarctica, climate change and all these things is only one of the factors that will lead to our demise. There are many other possibilities out there. And many of these scientists are totally convinced that our life on this, human life on this planet is not sustainable. We will disappear like the dinosaurs.
What do you think?
It doesn't make me nervous. And if you...
why?
I think I can give you an answer that Martin Luther gave in the 16th century. Mm. He was asked, what would you do if the world was going to vanish, was going to end in a cataclysm? And Luther said, I would plant an apple tree today.
And live right on. Robert in Salt Lake City, you're on the air with Werner Herzog.
Hello, Tom. Mr. Herzog, it's a pleasure to speak to
Hello,
you, and
Robert.
I just wanted to say that I consider you to be a doctor. The origin of the word doctor is to teach, and heavily laden throughout all of your work is a big theme of compassion. And I wanted to just ask you briefly, if I might, if you've ever had any involvement with the martial arts, or if you could speak to your ability to teach and learn with a inquisitive nature and yet to separate ego from that process. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so much for all your contributions.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you for the question. Yes, very kind. Martial arts, no, I have not been in it. And of course, it's not just a physical sort of thing. There is a spirit behind it, which I sense, and some of my friends, by the way, the man who co-wrote the screenplay for My Son, What Have You Done, Herb Golder, has three different black belts in martial arts disciplines. So I really appreciate that, and I think being physical is also a prerequisite to be a filmmaker. I think we have to develop a physical sense for, let's say, movements and to images. It's a little bit strange to say that, but having been physical myself in other disciplines, not martial arts, but I've been into soccer and into ski jumping, ski flying off ramps when I was a kid, I think it has done me very good. And I understand cinema quite often as something really physical. And so I recommend to people who apply for my film school, travel on foot, do something physical. Best would be something, a contact sport like sparring in a boxing ring. I think that would be quite good. But at the same time, do not neglect one basic thing. Read. So I give a reading list in my film school, the Rogue Film School, which starts with
Virgil.
Virgil, yes. Roman antiquity, some of the wonderful poems. Includes ancient or old Nordic poetry from Iceland, 1,000 years old, and Hemingway and whatever. So
it's a great list. I have to ask you about your Rogue Film School. Sarah Palin stolen your word there a little bit, but this is going to be what, long weekends? Just come for a long weekend, sign up, and if you can get in, you say it's not for the faint-hearted. You say it is for those who have traveled on foot, who have worked as bouncers in sex clubs or as wardens in a lunatic asylum for those who are willing to learn about lockpicking or forging shooting permits in countries not favoring their projects. And you say there will be censorship enforced in your film school. There will be no talk of shamans, yoga classes, nutritional values, herbal teas, or discovering your boundaries. What?
Yeah, all the New Age crap should be left out. So, and I say it as a provocation. Yeah. Of course, it gives a clear idea in which direction I'm going to steer. And of course, a part of wild things like forging documents, it's a spirit of making films. It's a sort of giving courage to your dreams, and in that way, I keep saying a film like Fitzcarraldo would not have been made if I hadn't forged a very elaborate shooting permit in the jungle in Peru. At the time, there was at the time there was a military dictatorship, and what we didn't know, a border war between Peru and Ecuador looming, and I was not allowed to move anymore with my ship. So I came up with a 4-page, wonderfully written, in flowery language, written in Spanish, of permitting me almost everything. And I was all of a sudden I was allowed to move, and it even had the signature of the president of the republic. And don't ask who did this signature.
Okay. But the 320-ton ship moved on over the mountain.
It moved on, yes, and over a mountain.
Sheila in Brighton, Massachusetts. Sheila, you're on the air with Werner Herzog.
Hi, I'm really honored to be speaking with you today. I just had a comment, really, which is that what I see is a almost transcendent, if you will, an inspirational parallel between that rather iconoclastic rogue penguin that is running away from the other group towards the distant mountains in that movie Encounters at the End of the World.
In Antarctica, and, yes.
And the human characters and people in other movies such as Kinski and Strasek and those who are on sort of iconoclastic and, almost insane. There was a question of whether or not animals such as penguins could be insane. And if we're animals, right? Mm-hmm. So that was just my comment and observation I'd like to make and say thank you for making your movie.
Yeah, Sheila, thank you.
Thank you for your comment. There's one thing that I should address. You are speaking of iconoclastic, which means destroying images, breaking the images into pieces. Now, I don't feel like that. I create them, and I really care about images. And the image of the lonesome penguin that wanders off into the interior of the continent instead of going to the ocean where he would find food is not a rogue act. I was actually interested in the question, is there such a thing as insanity among animals, insanity or derangement among penguins? Of course, I don't want to discuss the definition of insanity right here. That's too complicated. But I see the penguin more like a very tragic derangement, disorientation. I mean, he wanders off from the coast into a continent which is larger. Antarctica is larger than continental North America. Mm. And of course, he's wandering into his certain death. And it's a very tragic moment. It's not a rogue moment in my perception.
But you've said recently, looking at Hollywood, you said that I'm the only one far and wide who is actually clinical sane, quoting you here. I believe among the entire scene of filmmakers here in Los Angeles, I'm the only clinically sane one, period. What do you mean exactly?
Well, when you look at all the rituals and things going on at red carpets and at Hollywood parties, which I never attend. So, no, I said it more like a joke because I was always asked, yeah, isn't that borderline insane what you are doing? Of course it is not. I'm clinically sane, so to speak. And it's just a slightly provocative statement. There are are some very sane other filmmakers out there, I have to confess.
You came to the United States as a student very early in your life, as a college student. Now here in your late 60s, you're living in L.A. again. How long will this be your home?
Well, I'm happily married in the United States, so that will keep me there. And I love Los Angeles because I keep saying it's a city with the most substance in the United States, which makes people laugh or chuckle. But I mean it seriously. I think it's beyond the glitz and glamour of Hollywood. It is a wonderful city where things get done, where there's an enormous intensity of cultural things, of production of things. So I think I'm at the right place. I do not speak that I live in Hollywood, no, but I live in Los Angeles.
We've got a tweet for you here from Twitter. Cheryl says, have you seen the extra material on Tropic Thunder's DVD, the Ben Stiller film? It's a satire of your movies, Grizzly Man, Burden of Dreams.
No, I have not.
Well, there's a recommendation
for
you.
I'm going to look at it.
Tropic Thunder.
How others see me. No, it's fine that people make fun of me, and I think I'm making fun of myself sometimes, and my films are hilarious, so let's face it.
Werner Herzog, it's an honor to have you, and we're
Thank
very
you.
Grateful. Thank you for being with us today. Just terrific for you.
Thank you very much.
For all of us. Thank you. Werner Herzog's new films, The Bad Lieutenant, and My Son, What Have You Done, out just today in New York. We'll go out with music from Fitzcarraldo, 1982. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.